listen to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting it, passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Look, I got a bunch of like feely toys for my desk. And then look at this one. I got a, it's a cat. Oh, it's not anymore. And then I got another one. This thing, it's like metal in it.
Are you working on some stuff? Let me just describe. Katie just held up to the camera a, started with like three different squeezy balls and then a cat that squished into a thing and then like a long braided cable that also made squishy shapes. And then there was a fourth thing that actually looked like a cat toy, but maybe it was not.
No, it's a poppery.
Or like a vaginal strengthening exercise.
Oh, it could be used for that, couldn't it? My dad, throughout my whole childhood, he had this huge conference table at his, he was like boss of a something. He was like what was he called? The vice provost for research at the University of Miami when I was a child, which meant he kind of ran the med school. There was like the guy who ran it and then my dad and they ran it together and whatever that is. He had a huge conference table and at every seat, maybe there were like 12 seats at this conference table, big wood, pretty table. There was something ridiculous at every seat, like petrified poop and like a plate that said, that was like, it looked very presidential and it had a seal or something. And then it was signed by like Bozo the Clown, you know, and then like all kinds of feely, he used to call them feely rocks. He had like rocks that were soft that you could, you know, it was like smooth that you would want to touch in your hand. Just something interesting at each seat.
So your dad spent a lot of time at Spencer's Gifts is what I'm hearing.
Actually, good, close, Brookstone.
So the fancy version of Spencer's Gifts.
Yeah, exactly. We would go, like as a kid and my mother, we would go to places like Spencer's Gifts to try to be like, what else can we possibly find him that's either interesting or ridiculous that we can, you know, buy him for Christmassy time?
Sky Mall also.
Sky Mall, 100%. Brookstone, what's the other one? There's a Brookstone-esque store. Anyway, you get the idea. So yesterday in a fit of, I have to get out and see other energies besides my house. I went to like some of the really cute boutique-y stores here in town in Beacon. And I just went a little, I went to town. I was like, wouldn't it make my desk entertaining?
So you went to town and you went to town.
See what you did there?
I did.
See what you did? Okay. We have to get right on target just because Cece's coming, or my dear friend Cece Treadway, who's a very interesting, gifted, talented energy healer and musician. She's going to come on at 12:15, so 9:15 your time. And there's a concept I just want to drop into our minds before she gets here. And if we have time, I'll catch us up on Newman Manfredson. So, okay, here's what's tripping me out the most about this whole thing. I think I texted you this, but I have a note to myself in the form of an email that says forecast. And it was between last episode and this one. And I was going to say to you, hey, this time, let's go back into the Akashic Records of Consciousness, because my mind was fucking blown by that. And let's talk about leaping timelines, because it's a topic in a lot of consciousnessy circles lately.
And it was sort of relevant to the Mandela effect. Thank you.
Conversation. Absolutely. And it was on my mind and it's been on my mind for a couple months. Cut to Cece followed up with me and was like, hey, so are we, or I followed up with her. I can't remember. Are we still good for Tuesday to have you as the guest? She said, yeah, I really want to talk about this whole new timeline healing thing I'm doing with my clients. And I was like, what? And I was literally about to email you. And she said that in a Facebook Messenger message. And I was like, yeah, it's, the timing is good. So I have mostly questions about this timeline stuff, some awarenesses, some things I know, but mostly questions. And Cece seems to be working with this as a tool for healing. So I'm just super curious to hear. And I told her, okay, I'm not going to ask you any questions now. Like I want to, because we have a podcast to do. So I'll ask you the questions when you're here. But I was already like, okay, here's 90 questions. You know what I mean? You're going to have to help me remember where we left off with Newman Manfredson, because I'm pretty...
So the basic thing was, this was like a month ago or more, It was after the holidays when he had was supposed to come visit you, but then he didn't because he tested positive for COVID and you were really frustrated because it took him forever to test and you really had to push him. And anyway, that's how it had resolved. And you were also feeling really sorry for yourself because your ankle and you were laid up at home and you didn't get your snugs. That's where you basically were. But then you and Desmond started being like, did he have COVID? I don't know. And you got a little bit, there was some suspicion. And I got really uncomfortable because I thought we were really telling someone else's story. And like,
yeah,
you were accusing someone of lying on the air. And I was like, this is weird. I don't know if I feel okay about
this.
Well,
I actually feel that way right now. I'm like, God, can we say the things I'm gonna about to say? And I think, I think there's a way we can in a way that's healthy.
Well, I already said who we're talking about, so.
Well, let's explore it as a series of questions. Like in terms of, I'm not going to defame anybody's character, but I can share how I feel and how I felt and what occurred in the end. And people can make their own whatevers.
Okay.
I think we can do that. That seems kind of clean. So,
I mean, we already published the suspicions part, so that's already out there.
Well, what I'm trying to get clear on is I can't exactly tell where we ended in the, so I'll start talking where I think we left off. Here's the shortest version of where I think we left off. It's all a bit blurry at this point, but...
Oh, I can tell you. You said, I'm just going to text him right now. And I was like, can you not? Maybe you should actually talk like a human with this person because texts mislead.
But what was I going to ask at that point in a text?
Did you really have COVID?
Okay, got it. So I did ask that. But okay, here's what happened. Now I'm torn too about how much we need to catch people up, because if you're listening to this episode but you didn't listen to those previous episodes, you'll be confused. So maybe go back a few and listen if you're confused at this moment. But the basic gist is I was feeling unsettled about the whole thing, like something wasn't true, because my healer psychic friend was like, he's saying something not true. So I called him on the telephone and said, hey, is there anything you're feeling like unsafe to share with me? Because a friend of mine is a psychic and she told me this thing and it's sitting weird in my stomach. And now I'm worried that did you maybe not get sick, but feel like it was your only way out of seeing me? Is there something you're not saying? And then he revealed to me in a way that I didn't love. Here's something I didn't enjoy. I said to him directly, can you just tell me the truth? Are you like seeing someone and feel like you can't tell me? And his
response? Was included in the previous story.
Okay, good. I'm gonna tell a different part about that part right now.
Okay.
And his response was, there's something I do want to tell you. After I had just said, can you tell me are you seeing someone? And he was like, well, there's something I'd like to tell you. And then he starts to tell me like I hung out with this girl a few times, but nothing happened and it's not a thing. And I go, what do you mean there's something you want to tell me? I just asked you. It's not something you want to tell me. You're saying it as if you're coming up with the idea of telling me this thing on your own. But I just pointedly, do you understand the weirdness of,
yeah.
Is that, okay.
Yeah.
So that was just a not cool form of communication that made me feel even more like, what is going on here?
And if I recall, he was not telling you because he was going to tell you when he saw you. And then you and I had a little back and forth about
that. Well, so he says, yep. I still feel differently about it than I think you feel about it, which is...
No, I actually agree with you.
Okay.
I do. Once we talked through it last time about, like, no, you don't spring that on someone in the moment of, hey, we're about to get canoodly here.
Yeah. Also, you don't fly across the country and then drive across the country more to be like, oh, by the way, this trip that is clearly a makeout trip because we've been sexting a lot. I'm sort of seeing this other person and want to date them. By the way, so deal with that now that I'm in your living room.
Yeah.
So I said to him, so was your plan to do that? To just tell me in the living room? And he was like, I guess I hadn't thought about it that far ahead. And I was like, well, you should have thought about it because you don't give me a choice then. I have no choice. And he goes, well, she's Polly, so it's cool. I go, it's cool for her and you, but you didn't include me so I could decide if it was cool for me. Then he was very apologetic, owned up, said, I'm so sorry, felt really bad. Then we sort of ended the conversation. I was really upset. He was upset. We went away.
Then we talked about all this.
Right.
And then you were still suspicious.
Well, then I was like, because the psychic-y friend had said that the lie was about COVID, was about being sick or not. So I messaged him back and said, okay, sorry, one more thing. Well, first I called him and said, look, that was tense last night. I'm not happy about how this all played out, but I know you are more likely just codependently not telling me the truth, not like maliciously lying, because I know your heart. And he was like, that's really Drew. I was really afraid of conflict. It wasn't, that's all it was. And I'm like, cool, but not cool, but cool. Like, I understand and I don't like it, but I understand. And then I said, so there's no chance that you weren't actually sick, right? And he was like, no, I mean, I can show you my test results. I have them here and I haven't been to work in a week. And I happen to know he actually hadn't been to work in a week because we have mutual friends in common. And the only reason he would not go to work is if he was quarantined. So he was actually sick and whatever. So that part was just not a thing. And then I felt better about that. But this thing happened in my gut where I just sort of like, brings me back to the Enneagram, the idea of the gut types, head types, and heart types. I had a real awakening around that concept through this experience where my whole life, this is where this can be a useful teaching tool, hopefully, and not just a gossip session. But my whole life, people have said to me before I understood myself better, like I'd say like, what do you guys think I should do about this or that? Or I would be trying to figure something out. And people would say, well, just listen to your heart. Just do what your heart says. Follow joy. Where's the joy? Heart, joy, joy, heart. And I'd be like, I literally would feel like, I don't know what you're saying right now. What do you mean? Heart, my heart is just sitting there. My heart is here. I love him. I hate her. I feel this. I'm tired. I have to do spiritual work to get peaceful. How is my heart relevant to what we're talking about? I never understood what people were trying to help me understand about choosing from your heart. And I now realize I was asking twos, threes, and fours what I should do. And twos, threes, and fours go from the heart, maybe, possibly, because what is always been true for me is always my gut knows what's right, always. And I'm a gut type, eights, nines, and ones. And when this happened, I had this really like icky feeling in my gut after the whole thing was done. And the feeling was something like, it really showed me how I teach this a lot. It comes up a lot in classes with me somehow, but it really was another reminder lesson about how even if your reason for withholding information is because you're afraid of conflict, it really can affect people's experience of who you are. Like you land like untrustworthy to some people when you avoid telling the truth for whatever reason. And it left this feeling in my gut of like, I don't trust him now. And I want to trust him. In my heart, if you go, listen to your heart, what is your heart? I'm just mad at that phrase. That's why I'm making fun of it. My heart is like, yeah, I have love for him. But my gut says like, no, because I don't have time in my life to try. That was like 4 days of trying to wrestle the truth out of him. And it could have been so simple. That was so much emotional effort for something that if he had just told the truth, whatever the truth was, I would not be feeling untrusting of him now. But now, because I know his priority is to people please, and his priority is to avoid conflict, I don't feel like I can trust him. Now, I don't think he's like malicious. I don't think he's a bad dude. I think he's a lovely man who has a really hard time dealing with conflict. And that makes me feel like I can't trust him emotionally. Yeah. So I'm not like, it's not condemned. He's not condemned to hell forever. He's not, you know what I mean? It's not, there's no black and white wall that's there, but I do feel like I don't trust him so much right now to be the mature communicator that I need, even like, frankly, as a friend. I need friends who I just don't like. I'm not into that whole, we have the kind of friendship where I can't tell if you're telling me what's true for you or if you're trying to make me comfortable, which is then like think about how many weeks he was trying to make me feel comfortable by not telling me he was seeing someone, but meanwhile, talking to me like sexy talk, which builds an intimacy between the heart. So that whole time I'm under a guise of something not true. Anyway, la la la. It helped me trust my gut more. And it made me be like, gut types, right? Listen to the gut.
Different.
It's all the gut.
As an Enneagram 3.
Yes.
I 100% know what you're talking about. I get it. And I'm actually in agreement because what you said, part of that, what you said was, I can't trust him in like, for me, it doesn't, those two things don't match up in your, like, that makes you as a gut type not be able to quite connect to this. And what I'm about to say is not apology at all, because this is what I have been struggling with. I have been struggling with being him in this context for years. And it's what I've been working on because I don't like it either. It's not the right choice. People pleasing is not the right choice. Curating other people's experience of you is not honest. It is not true. It is an aversion of you. It's a version of you. It's not a lie. It's like you said, it's not a malicious lie, but it's like a, I'm going to shape your experience of you and take away your agency in that give and take. Like if you don't have all the information, how the fuck do you trust? And I know that. I've been the person who's been not quite trustworthy because of that. And so, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. And I appreciate it because I really want that. I want to not do that. I want to not do what he was doing. And I also have such deep compassion for where he was coming from. I think that's what it comes down to, is not defending it at all. It's actually something to be worked on. And I have such compassion for that choice, because it is terrifying to think you might not like something about me, or be made unhappy because of a choice I made. So I'd rather just not tell you about that choice, which is terrible. Because ultimately, you, especially as a gut type and an intuitive and a psychic and all the things, you fucking know. And all you're doing is feeling shitty because you don't have the actual information. But you know, there's some gaslighting. There's just an energy of like, something's not right and I feel shitty. So just let's just get it out there. Let's rip the Band-Aid off and feel really shitty, or actually go, that kind of sucks, but I'm glad I know.
I mean, I'd much rather go, that kind of sucks, I'd rather know, because I can go, oh, I feel disappointed that you're seeing someone else, and therefore I think I'm going to go ahead and put the kibosh on us making out, and that's a bummer. But thanks for telling me the truth, because now I trust you and we can hang out as friends and I can trust you. Or I can say, hey, I think I shouldn't even hang out, just because I need the space to, because I had one expectation and you had another, but you're not a bad dude and I still trust you because you told me what's what. Anyway, you get it. So that's what happened with that. And you know, I do hope that at some point I was going to say I hope some things, but I actually just feel pretty surrendered around it all. I'm sort of like, well, maybe one day we'll be able to be friends if he can really, really grow on that topic. In the meantime, I feel not like it's going to be a thing. I don't want to punish him. I don't want to hold him. Like, I don't want to withhold from him, but I just don't feel safe. So, like, it's also what was hard for me, and this is a good topic of conversation in relationship for women in general, is when women regularly that I talk to, that I've heard from, that I watch on the internet, that I coach as clients, that I've known, oftentimes, of course, not always, have the thing of, we're sort of teaching men while we're dating them. So there's a way where you're like, you know, and it's very common. Like, I remember when I was dating Dave in LA, I said something like, we had broken up and we had been friends, and I talked to him about some other dude I was dating, and I described a behavior the other dude was doing, and he goes, and I go, so it's like, what is that? And Dave said, well, he's a dude. Sounds like he's a dude. And I was like, what does that mean? And he was like, well, women teach men all the time. You're just teaching him because he's a dude. He doesn't know. And it sounds very simplistic the way I'm saying it, but it was actually quite illuminating, because Dave, that individual in particular, is such a quote unquote self-proclaimed dude. Like, he's a guy who like is like bumbling around reality and needs women to be like, don't be an idiot. And then he's quite good at being like, you're right, that was idiotic, my bad, and then correcting the behavior. So there's a way that women often have resentment and anger and pent up frustration because we're doing what's known as like all the quote unquote emotional labor of the relationship. We're having to teach you how to process your feelings. We're having to teach you how to express. We're having to teach you how to not be lying or withholding information. There's a lot of work, because it's not just me owning my stuff, being clean on my side of the street. It's also like, oh, he's a dude, so he doesn't know. And we have to like, now it's my job to be his healer or his mom or his teacher. And yes,
I think that applies in so many places too. It's basically, and I think it applies for like people of color teaching white people. I think it applies for, it's basically the person who least has to do work, which is the straight white man, is the one who in relationship often gets taught. And so like, yeah, like everything you're describing fits that gender norm. When you know me, I always get really uncomfortable when you say men and women, whatever.
No, but you're,
I'm
right.
Like,
you're
but
right
I'm
too.
Actually like, no, you're right. It's true. And also like, but it falls into that category, I think, because of the sort of framing of supremacy.
No, 100%. I mean,
of like white or straight.
Privilege.
Privilege. It comes in the place of privilege of men being like, I get away with it because I can fucking bumble through life and I can rely on your ass to keep helping me get better.
And for a long time in our culture, women and people of color have been afraid and disempowered and like not allowed or safe to confront white men because they've literally been in control of everything. So you had no agency to stand up to white men because their privilege ran the world and still
does
to a great degree does. Yeah. Yeah. So it is a binary thing. Like it is white men who blah, 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 blah. But also, of course, this dynamic, I'm sure, shows up in, you know, non-binary dynamics and women dating women and men dating men. I'm sure there's always somebody who's more like, I have to teach this other person the things.
Yeah.
But, and it's pretty fucking common.
Yeah.
In this particular binary with men and women.
In the binary of men who date women and women who date
That's
men.
Right.
Like that trope is, it's a trope for a reason.
That's right.
You know,
cliches are cliches
because they have happened quite often.
Because they're true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, our guest is here. Good talk.
Yeah.
That was real good. I like that. I'm glad we went there. Oh, my God. Everything. Mercy, compassion, forgiveness, but also boundaries and strength and holding one's own. Trusting one's gut. Look at that gorgeous picture of Cece Treadway. Hello. She's working on it. Look at that pretty background. She got the makeup work. You're looking good, friend. You're looking good. You went to Townsky's.
That's right. Well, I'm in Miami now. So this is what we do. This is what we do here.
So context, Cece was living up near me, beyond me, up in Woodstock, upstate New York, and has had much experience in Miami, Florida, lived there a bunch of times and is currently back in Miami. So context's shifting.
Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's so good to be here. It's good to see you and feel you and hello to the others that I don't know yet.
So this is Cassidy Jamal Brown, my co-host and dear, dear friend.
Hi, Cassidy.
And this is Desmond, our sound engineer, producer, extraordinaire, rad man.
Hi, Desmond. Nice
Desmond,
to meet you.
Rad Thank man.
You. Thank you for doing all of that.
And yeah, just for context for everybody, Cece is, I'll give you my little Cece intro, and then I'd love to hear kind of, I'll ask you stuff, and it'll poke you into saying words. So Cece and I met, oh my God, 1,000 million years ago in Florida, in Miami, at a, I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, creativity, like a show making class. It was like
a show making class, yeah, called The Field.
The Field. And it was like you would come and bring your material that you were working on, and there was a certain feedback style they taught, which I have taken and used ever since then, by the way. That feedback style I think was really smart. Anyway, I was making art, you were making art, we became buddies, and then you Barbara Brennan healer, and I did Sufi healing, and we both became these artsy healer people and have had what I would characterize as like really interestingly parallel paths. Like there's a lot we it's like our life paths share a lot of parallel qualities. While I would also say like the frequency of the two paths is quite unique, separate, like it's different from each other. We have different vibes, but our life paths have sort of some similar, like really deeply similar, I don't know what the word is there, like things about them. So I just always so value, there will be times in my life where I'm like, fuck, literally the only person in the world I could say this thought or process this feeling with is Cece Treadway. I gotta message her. And then I'll send you 85 long-winded voice memos on Facebook Messenger. And you'll be like, I can't, Katie, it's too many. It's too many messages. But I love you and hi. And I'm like, good point. Too many words. I got it. Was that all seem relatively true?
I think that's relatively true. And I want to mention that when I saw Katie perform at this workshop called The Field, like I was so blown away by how much she integrated into her performance of how much knowledge, experience, intelligence, as well as comedy, you know, what went in there and energy, because I was an energy healer. So I noticed these things. I was just completely blown away by her. Her piece was so complex. And then also you were such a pro, like when you had to stand in and like read lines for somebody, you jump in there like you had read the script 100 times. And I was like, well, this is fun watching somebody who really knows their craft. Like,
aww,
I was pretty.
Thanks.
Yeah. My piece was called like Angry Vomit, No, I Love You, where I just kind of danced around angrily in a circle for, you know, 5 minutes before I ran off stage. So
I don't remember that, but I believe I hear you and I support you in that being how you remember that. I don't remember.
Okay, it wasn't that memorable.
Well, so what I understand, so in your trajectory as an adult human mammal, you've been working like a fuck ton as an energy healer. And of course, like most of us on that track, there's just a large part of it, I assume, and I know, comes from you're doing your own healing work. And as you do your own healing work, you learn things and you become able to offer things to the world that people can't if they haven't had to do that work for themselves.
Right.
And then simultaneously, something I find so interesting about you is, and I want to hear all your words about all of this, is that you're a musician parallel to that. You're at the same time and maybe to the same degree, you're like a working musician of so many types too, singer, and you play all the instruments and, right?
I mean, I like how you perceive me. I would say that my main focus would be singing. And I do write music and I do kind of play the piano and guitar enough to like write some music, but certainly not enough to call myself like a real musician in that sense. But I do hear songs. I mean, I hear songs and I do my best to get them down, and I'm actually finally putting my album together. But I've been doing performing and choir singing and songwriting and sound healing and all that. Yeah. In tandem with my work, sometimes teaching courses that are just pure channeled sound healing. But I've been singing my whole life. So that's kind of...
That's true. And I feel like I'm always seeing stuff posted on your feed of you're like sitting in lotus position with the most glorious looking, spiritual, beautiful, thin, waifish, stunning model people with like backgrounds of green leaves and lush. And there's like a drum. And it's like, and I know you're channeling light and, but also singing. And I feel like I see that image a lot through your feed. And I'm like, she's doing cool shit with music. It's all like spirit and music as one is the social media perception I have.
That's perfect. Yeah. So I tour with my dear friend and sacred singer, Radharani, and she's incredible. And I was her like main harmonizer for the last 3 years. And we toured around the Northeast mainly. She's toured with some like super greats, Krishna Das, like, you know, just as far as everyone's always kind of moving in that world in the same stages. And so sometimes you get access, even as a harmonizer, like I would have access to sharing the stage with some of the most like world renowned musicians, which was really just beautiful because everyone's in it for the bhakti. They're in it for spirit. They're not there so much for, you know, the ego. Certainly that shows up, but it's like the way everybody just relates to each other and shares with each other. It's been a big, big blessing.
That's so cool. And so just to back up for the people listening who don't know you the way I do, like how, I think I remember you telling me you got into all the energy work and spirituality like very young because your family was, is that how it all started for you?
Yeah, my mom was really involved in the ARE community, which is the community surrounding Edgar Cayce. Who, if you know Edgar Cayce, he was like the sleeping prophet, they called him. And he used to just go into a trance and give people cures, natural cures for their ailments. And he was really, really a deeply Christian man. But I would say like an Essene energy, like that early, like pure love, no dogma. And so this whole community of spiritual growth and connection formed around him. And I kind of like grew up around that and had, you know, exposure to healers and channelers at quite a young age, and just was always open that way. And it was never discouraged. It was always a passion, always something I connected to, and no one told me otherwise. And even though it wasn't taught in schools and it wasn't around anywhere else, it didn't really seem to matter to me because it was so much a part of my world. And I always spoke openly with my friends, and I seemed to, in high school, have a group of friends, which was just like a miracle, who were all really open and just wonderful, amazing people who would go in. I'd be like, hey guys, want to like regress ourselves into other lifetimes tonight? And they'd be like, yeah, you
know, oh, that's great. What a gift.
It really was. I didn't realize it until, you know, I went out into the real world, and it's been basically traumatic ever since. But, you know.
I mean, when we were kids, we would do sleepovers and we would do like light as a feather, stiff as a board. I think when we're younger, we're more interested in like, but we might think of it like, I know for us, we weren't thinking of it as like, we quote, believe this. We're just playing with this energy. So it's like a pretty short distance though to, you were like, this is actually happening. And they'd be like, cool. Are we doing light as a feather, stiff as a board? No, we're regressing. So
totally. It's just, you know, it's like the gateway drug to
totally.
But also in, when I was 13, 14, I lived in Cuenca, Ecuador, South America. And I went to this all girls Catholic school. And it was an incredibly, like, you know, you're living in the Andes Mountains. The spiritual energy is really, really palpable. You have the indigenous people around you who are kind of like walking that all the time. Then, you know, I had to just say a lot of prayers all the time. Like, we were in these deep prayerful experiences for the entirety of my ninth grade year. And I had a lot of mystical experiences in that prayer field at that time. And I was a rebel because I came from the United States. I was like the only American at this all girls Catholic school. But the actual experience of the prayer was just potent, you know.
And these were prayers that the school was teaching you guys, or that was just in the...
Like the rosary.
Okay. And it was in school, or it was like you were just picking it up culturally. How was that?
Oh, being... No. In the school, like you arrive, you say the rosary 108 times, it's the whole school together. And then you go to class and you say it again before class. And then you say it again before every single class. And then you go to chapel and you pray. And then you go to also, you know, it's like it was...
How'd you wind up at that school? Like, was that something your parents wanted you to do, or...
Well, picture it, 1988, Cuenca, Ecuador, before the internet, you know what I mean? There weren't a lot of options. So you were either like, and South America is incredibly classist, especially at that time. So you had to go to the best school. If you were like a white American, you were walking right into an upper class experience in South America. And I had to go to the schools where they all went. And those were all of our friends. And I wasn't really allowed to socialize with anybody outside of my class. If I did, there were phone calls to my mother that I wasn't in the right group.
Wow.
And that this is going to harm my reputation. I mean, it was old school, like the old South.
But what took your family to Ecuador in the first place, is what I mean. Like, what? How did you guys wind up there?
We had an exchange. I guess it all goes back. My dad worked at the OAS, which was an organization, a government organization that had to do with like international getting along in the 80s. And he made an Ecuadorian friend. Then his niece came and lived with us as an exchange student when I was in elementary school. And we went down beforehand to get to know her family. Her family wanted to know who we were. And so we actually spent the summer in Ecuador. And my mom just really fell in love. She just sort of felt like, wow, we are so outside of American values, of materialism, of all this stuff. I mean, it hurt at that time, maybe seeing the intense classism wasn't going to be on her radar as much. And then my parents kind of went through a rocky period for like, I don't know, my entire adolescence. So they decided to have a separation. And in that separation, my mom was like, I have an idea. Let's go to Cuenca, Ecuador. We're going to take you out of New York, Westchester, New York, and plop you in Cuenca, Ecuador in the middle of like a divorce. And let's hope for the best, you know?
Oh my God. What a ride.
That was terrible. But, you know, I learned a lot.
I hear that.
I learned a lot.
And is it fair to say, am I tracking this correctly, that part of how you wound up sort of professionally working in the energy healing like world is because I remember that you were a dancer. You were like very much a dancer a lot for a long time, maybe. And then there was an injury to your foot. And then you became an editor at MTV, like a video editor, right?
I like how you're tracking this timeline. It's somewhat like that.
Okay. You tell me, because I have this like lovely narrative of like she was a dancer and then she broke her foot. And then in order to survive, she became a video editor. And she was so talented and she rose through the ranks. But then it wasn't enough for her soul and she became an energy healer. And now she sings with Ram Dass. Narrative complete. You tell me, what's the truth?
I mean, definitely those are the cliff notes. Yeah, I was dancing in New York City, super committed. And then I did get a foot injury. Didn't go right to MTV. That's when I moved to Miami the first time. Cause I was like, I don't want to be in New York City if I can't dance, you know? So anyway, I went to Miami where my mom was living and I met some people through her actually and got a job working on music video sets for Latin America. And then as it turns out, they discovered that I could edit because I had gone to film school actually.
My God, what creative thing can you not nail?
Math, the creativity of math.
I hear you.
Remembering names, like that's
yeah, can't do it.
I met, and then like that was the in the 90s, and early 2000s, Miami was like really booming, kind of how it is now. And that was super scary. Then it was really fun. I just met these music video directors and they hired me. I started editing music videos like for big stars. I was kind of taking this whole like other reality, you know, with these hot South American directors and art directors who were just kind of whining and dining me, taking me shopping, and like giving me the best jobs. So it's so good.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember hanging out with you a couple times in that period and feeling like this is how I felt. Like, Cass, you'll appreciate this knowing me the way you and I know each other, which for context for you, Cece, is a lot of improv comedy and theater, like professional regional theater. Anyway, so like wacky, goofy, frumpy, makes sense over here. And so I'd hang out with Cece on South Beach and be like, everybody is tall and thin and they can all dance really well. And I know I'm going to make a fart joke and they're going to ask me to leave. Like, I'm going to do some wildly inappropriate, frumpy thing. And they're going to be like, who brought the weird nerd lady? Like, those were my self-critical judgments at the time. I just felt like you were kind of, you floated through this etheric realm of beauty and wonder where people just float and live. And then you edit things. And I was like, how is her life like that? How? I'm just trying to not die over here.
Well, I also was trying to not die, you know.
I know, but I'm just talking about...
Within that was actually... I could see your perception, totally.
No, of course. And like, we got to know each other and we understood each other as people on a path. And that was the deeper truth. But it was interesting just to be introduced to your sort of external reality and have it be... It's just so different from where I came from. So it's like, I always felt kind of special, like I was invited into a club of another dimension, like elves and fairies. And I'm just like humpbacked and clawing my way through the mud.
You're a halfling.
Yeah, totally.
Oh yeah, my God. Definitely was like not my experience of you. It was basically like I'm hanging out with a creative spiritual comic genius. And like, you
know, my God,
I feel so happy about it in this crazy world of Miami.
Isn't perception amazing? Like the filters of insanity, which brings me to, so the foot and the editing and then before I get to where I was going to go. So how did it go from editing amazing Latin music videos to like, I'm going to have a healing business?
Right. Well, you know, while that was going on, I was always involved in my spiritual life. You know, I actually became my first job before I went to college was working at like the local New Age jewelry store with my first spiritual mentor, Suzanne Whittle. I was taken into this incredible world of healers and tarot and, you know, witchy stuff. And I just loved it. And I worked there like every vacation through college. And Suzanne was really like my spiritual mama. And then I was always in therapy working on myself. I lived at Kripalu Yoga Center after I graduated from college and became sort of got my first like energy healing and Reiki and stuff there. And I was always going to yoga, studying, going to the ashrams, all through the dancing time, all through the video editing time. And then I just like really, really, I really wanted to be an energy healer. I knew that that's what I was going to do. I just sort of felt like I had to get old enough and mature enough to even think about it. I just kind of wanted to like sow my wild oats before I did it, because I knew it was like a serious job, like, which it is. It's really, it's like, you know, it's not like editing a music video.
No. Although, you're dealing with people's souls, right?
Right. You're dealing with people's souls, but you're still working, as we're talking about timelines. And video editing taught me a lot about timelines and pulling stories together, what you need to take out, where you need to go back to find something where the whole timeline got created so you can shift it around, reweave it into a new story, you know, move your energy forward. It's actually like an essential part of healing, I think.
So, okay. So then as I was telling you briefly in voice memo form, I was just catching Cass up on this. I, after our last episode where we went into, I told both of you know, Cass, because you were there and Cece, I told you about it. We went into the Akashic Records of consciousness itself. And I now forever just want to live there. It was so good, just as an energetic experience, but also it gave us so much cool intel. And I hung up that session and I went, next time when we go in the records of consciousness, I want to talk about timelines, because it's been in my field and I'm hearing about it from people. And I've had a few clients come to me who, to be fair, in the context of those individuals, heard about it on the wind and have, in those particular situations, I believe were looking for a way out of their pain to just like, let's just hop into a new timeline. I'm sick of this. This is hard. And when I was in the records for those individuals, they were like, no, you have to help them drop in like you're doing with everyone. So we're dropping in, we're bringing light, we're healing the pain, we're going, the normal healing stuff, right? And so I was left with just a lot of questions about how is this idea of time, what are they? I can't wait to hear about this. And like, how do we understand using them in a healing context that isn't, you know, just a way to dissociate or bypass, which I'm sure that's not what you're up to. So I'm so curious, what is all that? Can you tell us anything? I'm so eager to hear anything you know about it.
Right. Well, first of all, just to address the kind of timeline you're talking about, like being able to jump realities in some way, switch identities. You know, and some people really are looking for an identity shift.
Right.
I would give an example, like when people go full born again Christian or something, they really have like, there's a lot of people who are moving in that direction right now because the level of stress is so, so high. And actually sometimes the world of personal growth, new age spirituality, all that stuff, it's very complex.
Mm-hmm.
And like Jesus is real simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's clear.
You know, and yet it's basically a decision to completely give up your old identity and submit yourself to Jesus, which is a new identity. And so that to me feels more like jumping identities and jumping timelines and just saying goodbye. It's a very conscious choice, right? We don't know where it's going to go. So we could see like many examples of that. When I'm speaking of timeline healing, I'm really thinking of timelines as a way to frame and organize a healer's massive skill set to be able to work with a client at a very quick pace. And working with the clients who have also worked for a long time. It's a way to see through the timelines that we create in this lifetime, ones that have started from other lifetimes, ones that have started when we made an intention to incarnate this time. So it's how we're actually organizing our stories, how we're actually organizing the threads. So you might have a timeline of health and you might have a timeline of illness. If we really want to look at how that timeline of illness got created. It's not just one event. It's going to be many different events anchored into a timeline that creates your current reality. Those timelines are going to be interwoven with other ones. And so what I've noticed is that when I'm working with clients and we're not looking for a specific incident, but we're looking for an entire like expanse of time, we're able to really not just unlock what might be the taproot of a situation, but we might be looking also at a real root system, like a fibrous root, which has many different things, and they're all important, you know. So we want to see how these beliefs or patterns have been reinforced over time, and we might need to make many, many visits through time. What I've noticed with people who have been doing healing for a while is that they have many, almost like a fragmented healing story, even though it's done them so much good, and I would include myself in this. We have that time we healed our thing over there, you know, we have that time we healed our thing over there, and then somehow they don't get woven back in to, or like collapsed back into one timeline where all of our energy can actually pulse forward in a direction of our choosing. When we release enough of the unconscious energy into the conscious, then we're able to really focus that energy. Of course, that means we have to know ourselves enough and be confident enough to be able to actually do something to create, you know, because I think there's been a lot of like, and this would be natural, when you start getting more energy, you have unlimited possibilities. You know?
Right, 100%. And that can be overwhelming too.
That can be very overwhelming. So what I've noticed is that even though people might have had a lot of relief from their chronic patterns, whether it be codependency or illness or whatever it is that somehow it still keeps coming back. Somehow the attraction pattern, the, you know, whatever it is that makes us habitually respond to something in the same way keeps coming back because we really do learn and cycle through patterns. What I found is that working through timelines that are actually taking into account these cycles and into account that we've incarnated with patterns that move through like the wheel of the year and astrology and all that stuff. When we take that into account and we keep visiting and like almost combing through and meeting ourselves in each of those times, when we meet ourselves in these different times, that's when the healer's toolkit becomes readily available. So, you know, how many trainings have you taken over the last 20 years, 30 years?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, a lot.
73.
Exactly. So we know that when we get with a client, we're always pulling from our toolkit. When we're working with timelines or with this, it's just a framework, right? It's just a structure. We know that we can move back and forth through time and all around and all different lifetimes. And whenever we meet that aspect of ourselves in that time, we pull out the toolkit. Do we need somatic healing here? Do we need a past life healing? Do we need an entity clearing? Do we need, you know, whatever it is, some childhood love, some yummies? Like, you know, that's when whatever the toolkit is comes out. But when we create this continuous thread, the mind defragments, you know, the mind, and this is like a trauma thing, right? It goes from like this isolated event of happiness over here, an isolated sad event over here. And we begin to unlock the full storyline of how these things came to be. So for instance, I had a storyline in my mind that everything in my childhood was really happy and really good until, you know, I was 11 or 12. And then it was like, there was this huge shift. And everything just went to shit. You know, that was like the story. And I couldn't make sense of what happened. There were times when I would go to my childhood home. I would like do a pilgrimage and I would just sit in front of it. And I'd be like, what happened? What happened? I mean, you know, like just decades of therapy around like what that break was. You know, when I started doing timeline work and was able to bring my full presence over several different meeting points through time, the undercurrents of energy that I couldn't be aware of as a child started to become very, very loud. They didn't become loud again as one sort of moment. They became loud of like an entire energetic template that was running through time with me unconsciously.
Huh.
And maybe nobody in the household was aware of these unconscious energies. Maybe they were, but I, as a child, certainly not aware of them, but I was feeling them. In my adult awareness, able to hold more of everything, could go back and feel these things and my, you know, my current capabilities. Then what happens is we're able to see, oh my God, or we're able to remember things we really couldn't remember. So some people could say like, oh, that was, you know, like you forgot it or you whatever. But really it's that like, we just don't have a lot of conscious awareness when we're little. So when we're able to feel those undercurrents, then we can know, or we can flash to that moment where we were crying in our room for hours and we didn't know why. Or we can flash to that moment where we saw our mom feeling or saying something or acting in the behavior that killed us as an adolescent that maybe we just didn't know was there as a child. So this also like works, let's say, with my mom, who, for instance, her mother was an alcoholic, but her alcoholism didn't kick in until she was 15. So in her mind, everything was fine until her mother started drinking. When she started doing a little more investigation, she could, you know, maybe see some other elements that could have hinted, but it didn't make any sense. As I really started talking to her, you know, I could share with her, like, listen, there are things we cannot see or understand as a kid that were always there, the undercurrent that drove, that finally, you know, ended in her drinking and making the decision to kind of escape her reality or whatever it was, not deal with her pain. But at that, so I want to say for this, what's been coming up is for an advanced person, because you have to have a certain amount of understanding already so that you can start really connecting the dots.
That makes sense.
And then collapsing that timeline into your conscious awareness now, which gives you so much more energy now to create what you want. It leaves those dangling threads of why and starts to bring them together.
That makes total sense. Would it be fair to say, I want to just get the words you mean in certain sentences. Do you mean, when you say timeline, do you mean, are we talking about actual time-space continuum, or are you saying, is it a metaphor?
Metaphor, but we could say, I took the definition from the dictionary, and the timeline is a representation or exhibit of key events within a particular historical period, often consisting of illustrative visual material accompanied by written commentary arranged chronologically.
Oh my. So then is this necessarily a function, is a timeline as we're defining it here, necessarily a function of the mind? Does it need the mind involved in it, or does it exist energetically, or both?
Both. And I think that we, you know, the mind sometimes gets a bad rap, but when it's in service to the spirit, it's our tool. It's our most powerful tool, actually, because we, when we become one with our thought, and our thought is at one with our heart and our soul, then we are in, you know, a total present moment creation zone. A timeline to me is that when we have the ability, and we do this, I believe that we do this, that when we're planning a lifetime, we are planning certain events and experiences that get anchored through our linear time here on Earth. So if you were creating an animation path, you had an idea, right? That you wanted to make this curvy line. It's going to go like this. To make that line, you're going to have to put anchor points through it. And then, so that's like the basic structure. And then the flow, because of the coordinates, will happen. The shape will happen. So when we're planning our lifetime, we're actually positioning some anchor points. And those anchor points contain a lot of energy, and they contain instructions and options for where we might want to create the shape of our lives. So this, to me, is consciously creating a timeline from our spirit selves when we're in, when we're masterminding our life.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this. There's a lot here, obviously, but I'm thinking about how, like, when I work with a client, sometimes what I'll ask for is that everything that created everything across all time, dimension, space, reality that created the current blah, blah, blah that they're dealing with, bring us in contact with that and reintegrate what needs to be integrated and clear what needs to be cleared. And so I think what I'm assuming is, and sometimes it takes more than one session, but I'm always, the intention is always all of it everywhere from every dimension, which I'm sure we're all operating that way. And I'll find that, like, you know, certain people need however many to deal with that one nugget of everything about that nugget, though, goes and completes and reintegrates. And it takes time to do that. And then other people, it takes less time, and other people, it takes longer time. But I guess I'm seeing it as, if it didn't do that, they wouldn't feel better. So then how do we know, when is it relevant to integrate this? Like, you see what I'm asking? Like if we're, our intention, because, you know, okay, so for the listener, spirit can do everything on many dimensions all at once. We are like, I think in linear time. Spirit is like everywhere all the time. So if I say to spirit, hey, Jenny is here for a healing session and she's always triggered by this thing, can you take us to the places in time, dimension, space, reality, past, present, future, and bring all those pieces together and heal everything and clear it all? And the spirit goes, yeah. And then it does. And then Jenny either needs three more of those or one more or none more. And then Jenny's like, holy fuck, everything's different around that thing. I hear that as being, it's encompassed the timeline, like the points on the timeline, but maybe it isn't. Is that, how would you frame, what do you hear me saying that's different? Does that make sense?
I think where this work might differ, but it includes what you just said, like absolutely, is that when we're working with people who have a real grasp on their own process, we want their full presence and consciousness through the process. So we're bringing them through time so they can meet themselves. And so they have that big experience where spirit comes and clears everything through all timelines and all dimensions and all that kind of stuff. And then we say, amazing. Let's now move forward in time to another point where that same story was running and meet that aspect of yourself and let her know what we just did.
Like in future time.
Could be future, but if you were clearing something from when they were 5 years old, you might move to 21-year-old when that person, because of what happened at five, said, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and have sex with this guy who doesn't respect me and who's going to, you know what I mean? So we moved her, and maybe she got stuck in a pattern of giving herself away sexually, you know? So when we meet her and we say, wow, this is what happened and this is what I learned, the driving force of your behavior is based on what happened then. You're trying to resolve what happened then, right? Like with all trauma. But we want to tell you what we learned here. And I have the client with their full presence share with that aspect of themselves, the new energy, the new awareness, the new truth. Like, this actually isn't the truth that you have to give yourself away like this. And then that because those decisions that happen in college, let's say, have a ripple effect. That's so vulnerable, right? So even if we healed the thing at five, we're still flailing around at 21. So then we might move to 27, 28 and say, like, guess what we learned, you know? And then we show them what we just did at 21 and at five. And they're like, oh my God. I had to tell my 15-year-old self that my entire lifetime pattern of picking impossible relational situations to try and get my family back together doesn't work. That in my mid-40s now, this underlying driving force to do this, no matter how much therapy I did, it didn't work. My family was never going to get back together. It was a disaster. That part of me, that 15-year-old, had to mourn for almost 2 weeks, actually, because the entire impulse of that timeline of my life was based on this incredible, like, self-fulfilling prophecy, and it deprived me of so many of the things that I wanted in life. And we had to live with that. We had to sit there and be like, okay, you know, a team. I'm a team member with all the different aspects of myself. through time. But then
I have a question for, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think Cass has a question.
Yeah, it's on this topic. It's similar to you, Katie. It's the framing. Like I'm getting, what I'm hearing is we do the healing, but the problem is you've actually healed something that now I've used all my experiences to give me tools to survive, basically. And as a result, I've navigated the world with these whatever, armors, defenses, swords, whatever it is. Now you heal that shit from the past or wherever, anywhere in time, dimension, space. But now I'm actually kind of a little bit now at sea because you actually took away the thing that was that I was riding on. And so now we have to reintegrate ourselves to our newly healed reality. We can't just go like, good, I'm better. We say, oh shit, now that you're, quote, better, you can experience this differently. And actually maybe you can. So now you got to sort of re-navigate all of the, it's like, yeah, you have to re-navigate your life because you're now different than you were before. So you can't just heal and be good. You have to heal and now re-navigate yourself. Does that make sense?
That's definitely part of it. Sometimes when we have a mega healing, it's going to ripple through and affect our present day life. But sometimes it doesn't, right? It stays over there. So we bring it in, we relearn how to be us. And so, and that process can take a little longer. Like I have to say, I did so much timeline work in the last year that I needed a moment because I was like, I don't even know what my driving force is anymore, because my driving force of my whole entire life was unconsciously to fix my family and to bring us all back into harmony. And even though that was wound-based, it was meaningful to me. It was a very strong motivator. So what's my motivator now? And that's when we have enough energy actually in our own presence at where we are today to say, wow, I want to use all this energy to create, to be a creator, which is another stage, right? Which is when we start creating timelines consciously.
Because I hear you talking about, in addition to what Cassidy just brought forward, I hear you also talking about parts work, really, that like the 21-year-old and the 27-year-old might need to be actually consciously informed about the new energy pattern that exists in the nervous system frequency field because of something you did with the 5-year-old. So it's not just about integrating what you did as for the 5-year-old into your new life and learning how to do that. It's about like educating and upgrading the other places in age, time, where they were affected by.
Right. So, and those places, those ages are all anchor points that are containing energy. If we reprogram them with a new awareness, then we have way more energy flowing in a healthy timeline.
Interesting.
And we do it all the way to our present age.
Right.
And then we can open up to a potential future.
Yeah.
Knowing all the variables about trying to create in this reality where we have such a slim view of what's actually going on.
For sure. Gosh, so interesting.
I found this with my advanced students. They're able to heal and complete and resolve so much because their psyche at all these different stages actually understands what's going on, actually has a context. Not only that, because of this energy really is the work of the soul, they're getting in touch with their soul desire, what they were learning, the soul lesson and all that kind of stuff. They're feeling that rumble underneath, which then at a certain point will turn to gratitude for the material that they've just implemented into their knowing, into their learning as a soul. All the gifts, all that stuff become really clear and obvious, but they start to be used then consciously, way more used consciously.
Makes sense. It's very interesting. I want to kind of thinking about how to frame this, but I think I might be lucky on a topic here, which is that sometimes you have such an excellent, like, I don't know even how to say this. You have mental frameworks for things and words that describe the mental frameworks for things that are so useful and particular and specific about details I can't hold on to mentally at all. Like, the best way I can say this, I'm going to try to say this the way I mean it. I always found the Barbara Brennan framework a little difficult for me because there were so many concepts and auric fields and layers and the thing and the purple and is it the flame or is it the light? And I was like, words, what? Whereas I found that like, if I just went to God and then brought the light through, it would show me individual things that were required in individual moments. And all those tools were available. Like I learned about, I don't know, the fourth layer of the auric field because I got shown it in a session with a client because they needed it. But if I had tried to, this is just, by the way, me speaking about my brain and its limitations and how I just don't function. We all function differently, right? So when I hear you, I go, that is so much to understand. I give you so much credit because I don't have, I have to be shown it in the moment and how it's relevant. And then I go away and go, I don't even know if I remember what that was. But one of the values I'm hearing as I hear you talk, obviously, of how you get to frame things is for the client, you have like a lot of bird's eye view language for things that they might need. They might really need
Macro energetics.
Yeah. And like I get shown macro things in the records, but I don't walk around knowing them always. Some I remember a lot from sessions, but then sometimes I don't. And I don't really think I could retain it. Like it's not a priority in my world. Mm-hmm. And I realize that could sound like I don't give a shit about the people I'm working with, but that's not true. It's more like I just operate a very different way. And I'm very admiring of how your way is. Your way is interesting.
Would you say, baby, I love your way?
Baby, I love your way.
Would you sing that?
Can
please?
We call this episode that?
Ooh.
Baby, I love your way.
Well, thank you. I feel like there are times where I've been much more like what you just said, Laura. I don't want to know. I just go in. I don't even think about it. And I just let spirit guides the whole thing. And then there are times where literally spirit just starts dumping these like systems on me. And I'm like, oh my God, you know what I mean? And that's the download. The download is the system. And the more experience I have and the more trainings I do, the more it falls on me. And so the last 2 years, I've studied with a couple people. One is my friend Amaji, who's created like a brilliant system of healing and clearing. And then I work with this other woman named Naya Leigh. And she has an amazing system of energy psychology and tracking in this way that was, I did like an intensive with her for like 4 months because last year was so brutal that I actually didn't know if I had the tools to move forward. Like I was just done. And so I really needed a lot of extra help. So I was working with Naya and with Amaji and then my main healer, mama named Joy Adler, who's a Brennan healer. So I had three different systems like supporting me through the hardest time of my life. And in that experience, it was like, I so deeply practiced the integration of everything I had ever studied in my own work and more because of these incredible women who were holding systems. So they have given me the transmission and my ability to do this macro thing. And I want to say that the same thing happened years ago when I had this like coach come in and spend the like 2 days with me looking at all of my piecemeal work, all of my different little like spur of the moment courses and trainings and this kind of stuff. And he was able to macro it all into a system. Sitting in his energy and his mind also was like this ding, ding, ding. Okay, this is possible. You know, this is just possible to do. And I just kept getting the transmission of how that is. So also I will say that my dad is a macro economist. And so I did grow up with that sort of energy, like, you know, I've inherited that. And I also being an editor, right? What do we do as an editor? We take material from all different sources, all different stories, all different snippets of life. And we put it together in a cohesive timeline. We might have in that timeline, four different possibilities for where we want to go next. We have to figure out a way to collapse those timelines so that the story can remain consistent and can connect with others, can connect with our essence and can connect with the world in the way that we would really like. So ultimately, all of this work is so that the story of our lives makes sense to us. We have all this energy for it. And so that we can line up with synchronicity in a way that's powerful and effective. And so that we can like be in contact with others, be in our humanity, like be in this next phase of humanity with like all of our humanity-ness, which I think is the whole point. I mean, it's my passion for this weird experience we're having that makes me nerd out in the ways that I do.
Right. Well, Squeezle the dog has joined us. And so we've clearly hit on something important. We've hit the whole narrative, the core piece. And that's when the beast of burden arrives.
I feel like Squeezle often shows up when you're about to go into the records. Like, oh, it's records time.
It's time.
Like, I didn't even know that.
Legitimately, for real. So that is my question, because I do have to, we have to wrap up by 1:28.
Okay.
And it's 1:03.
One more thing about this.
Yes.
Well, the next thing I want to say about it is I am teaching a training on timeline healing that starts March 8th. So
perfect.
If you are interested in learning this, or even if you want to receive one from me, just go to my website, lightschoolarts.com, and sign up for the mailing list. I haven't put up the like promotion page yet because it's just such a pain in the booty to do so. But I will do that soon and we'll be sending out the information on it. Or you can just message me directly.
And how? Where would they do that? Through your site?
Through my site or go to my Instagram, which is at CC Treadway Arts or something. Or just CC, what is it? I don't know.
So go to her website, find her there.
Light School Arts. And I'm CC Treadway.
And part of what's so fun for me to have, I mean, it's like, I don't know, something that's always been really clear to me is I think, well, anyway, is that everybody needs what they need. Like we're so specific and unique as individuals that like, I can't do what you do and Amaji can't do what the guy from India, whose name I can't think of, does. And that guy can't do what Cassidy does. And everybody needs what they need when they need it. And I just love how, like, something that I keep seeing in the records lately is they keep showing me this kind of like, let's see if I can, macro view of, and it'll sound trite, but like the perfection of the unfolding of everything. Like they show me like, yeah, well, you couldn't have bloody blood until you bloody blood. So it's fine. And then, or, but you needed this to get, you can't even hear that until that is in place. And this person left your field because they had to go to that thing to get this thing. And that it's, I'm sitting in there and I'm just seeing it all. And it, this will sound maybe like a random transition, but it takes me back to human design. Cause I'm constantly seeing through the structure of human design, the, which they show me a lot these days in the records, the absolute unchangeability of what is, like the perfection of everything as it is. Like it was all going to occur the way it's occurring anyway. So there was nothing ever any of us could do any other way. In other words, your path is going to be your fucking path and my path is going to be my path. And people need what they need when they need it. So let's expose people to as many things as are we can so that whatever's relevant to the people listening is now available to them. I've had so many synchronistic things in my life where I'm quote, quote, randomly listening to a podcast or chatting with a friend or having Chinese food or whatever it is. And then like the perfect answer to the current problem walks in the door. And part of what I see this like podcast doing, hopefully, if we're, you know, hopefully, who knows, is being one of those. It's like, and I'll get messages from people and they'll go, well, thank God your person on the show said this thing because then it made me look into that thing and then blah-bitty-blah-bitty-boo. But I do love to ponder the ways of the degrees to which all of it is written, which I know sort of flies in the face of we're all conscious creators and we're creating our timelines and our realities. Like, I know those can seem antithetical. I kind of don't. More and more, I'm like, I don't think they are antithetical because, right? Because even the part of you, the aspect of you that we call the conscious chooser, you didn't choose how that conscious chooser is. None of us chose to choose what we're choosing, right?
I don't know. I think who wrote it? If you say it's all written, who wrote it? And aren't we an aspect of that writer?
Yes.
And I think we get our shot here to become a co-writer with the writer, which is us. Ew. And then sometimes there are things we can't avoid. It's gonna, they're anchored in. They're going to happen. It's written.
Yeah.
You know, and ain't nothing going to stop it.
Uh-huh.
And so I think finding that balance of like how much creatorship we have and how much we have to surrender is like, that's like.
That's the whole game.
That's the whole game.
And I think for me, being someone who so has no problem being directive and choosing, my lessons are always around like, cool, cool, cool. So choose a little less, honey, because you're not really in fucking charge. And when I do that, it puts me in balance. But a lot of people I work with, they need the other directional balance. They need to be like, okay, I have to like do a thing because I'm just floating really well here. But like, why can't I make money or whatever their thing is?
Right.
Yeah. But you're right.
Love the why can't I make money timelines. I love going back through there and just combing through it. So fun. And seeing them start to make more money.
Rock on. Sweet. I need to pee. Can we do a 2-minute break? Des and Cass, just so I can.
Yeah, I want to get in these records. That's super exciting. I want to see you do your thing.
Yeah. We're going to have to dip in and out real quick, unfortunately, but let's do it. Well, let's do it. I'm thinking we go in the records of consciousness. All right. Okay. Just getting my little prairie prayers, keys. All right. Well, it'll be kind of, I'm not going to go through a full, huge meditation at the beginning because I don't need to, but B, we don't need you to, and C, we don't have time. But we'll do a simple one. All right, so we'll close our eyes. And we'll just say, take a few conscious breaths into the low belly. Really anchoring into the seat of the self, all the way down there at the base of the old spine and up through the different centers, breathing into the low belly. I mean, and we'll feel our feet on the ground. And I'm just listening for how much of this we need to go through at this moment. Okay, they're saying none. So as we breathe into the low belly, we'll just see our little foot chakras at the bottom center of each foot spinning open. Just imagine there's little vortices there for those listening. Spinning open, spinning wide, like little tornadoes of light opening at the bottom of each foot. And we'll feel our breath deepening into the pelvic floor. And we'll slow ourselves down a bit by breathing a little deeper, feeling the bottoms of our feet, seeing those foot chakras spin open. And we'll watch as 500 energetic tree roots of light anchor through the open window of each foot. Each of us being a tree of light in consciousness, metaphorically speaking, we see energetic roots extend through the open window of each foot, 500 through each foot, sending 1,000 tree roots of light, hundreds of miles down into the earth. Through our conscious allowing and conscious intention, letting go of efforting, trying, doing, pushing. Amen. And we'll watch as a grounding cord about 1.5 feet wide anchors from the hips down to the center of the earth, big wide cord of light. And last, we'll watch as a nice flowing abundant river of divine light given by Sophia Gaia, the soul of this planet, flows up through the grounding cord, nourishing it, flows into the root chakra, flows down and forward through each of our hip sockets, down through the quads and glutes and hamstrings, knees and calves and shins and ankles and feet. And we'll watch that rushing river of light flood down into those 1,000 tree roots of light. Anchoring us to the here and now, giving the light body of us anchoring, tripod grounding structure of anchoring through the 1,000 roots and the grounding cord. Law. And just for time, so we do acknowledge the forces of light asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know consciousness itself in the light of the Akashic records. Help me to see consciousness itself through the eyes of the lords of the records. And enable us to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of consciousness itself have for Allah, consciousness itself. All right, and as we anchor into the records of consciousness, which I still find entertaining, just asking, for clarification, yes, okay. And anything and everything in my field or anybody else's watching, listening, or here that would stand in the way of us receiving clear guidance, direction, insight, awareness through this particular alignment, we ask that that be released, uncreated, dissolved, released, integrated, opened, cleared across all time, dimension, space, reality. All right. So interesting, because the last time we did this, Cassidy, they wanted, it was like, eyes open, and that's how it is again, eyes open, and they want me to open this curtain, one second, so I can see outside. Okay, and the first thing is, there's like a sense of them laughing at, like, it's charming to them that we think we're going somewhere far away when we tap into consciousness. It's right here. It's available all the time. But it's a state of being for a human being to be able to access or live in or choose it. And they're just giving me a little talking to about the ways I love to go unconscious. They're like, you like to go to sleep in the second chakra. You like to go to sleep in the third chakra. You like to just numb it out, shut it down, watch that TV. And it's true. I also like being awake. This feels pretty great. So do we have any questions for it? Any of us? I can come up with one, but I'd love to give you guys room. So that's a no. Cass, nothing? Yeah. Dez?
I just, from their perspective, is there more than one Desmond?
More than one Desmond?
Or any of us, but since I'm asking the question, I'll make it personal.
Okay, so how do you define more than one?
Can they see a Desmond that is sitting here recording this podcast? Can they see a Desmond that never moved out of Billings, Montana? Can they see a Desmond who's still living in Seattle?
Okay, well, what I get is yes, no, yes.
And a 45-year-old Desmond, not... I know they can see me at all points in my life. They can see a 12-year-old Desmond in Billings. They can see a 25-year-old Desmond in Seattle. Can they see a 45-year-old Desmond that made different choices?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And are you asking about the nature of time-space, or are you asking about your particular trajectory?
I don't know. I'm trying to ask the simplest question that will keep this record reading under 4 hours.
Well, why don't you get a little more complex, if you don't mind?
Are all of the Desmonds where they need to be, or is there
okay
an alpha Desmond, an alpha timeline?
All right, well, you're right, that is big. All right. Are all the Desmonds where they need to be? There's some work that could occur. If we were to dive in and do a bunch of work with you, we want to pull some aspects of self from other dimensions into this one. We want to line things up. We want to pull some energies out that are heavy. We want to, as Cece was saying, give you more conscious choice in the moment. There's healing to be done. So are aspects of you... functioning, living, split off into other time spaces? Yes. Can we work with that? Of course. If you so chose to do that, we could do that.
But is the goal to braid all of those timelines into one, or is the goal for each one of them to do their thing and gather the...
Yes. Braid all timelines into one. Because part of what happens with trauma, and whether we're talking about, so you have trauma in this lifetime, and then you have trauma from many lifetimes in other directions, in the past, left, right, forward, and back. And so fragmentation in general is not what we're heading toward. We're heading toward unification and oneness and wholeness. And part of your soul's journey has to do with defragmenting, coming together, becoming whole. Healing down there at the pit of the belly and the heart and the spinal column and the brainstem. So no, they don't live out their own. We're not keeping you fragmented and watching different Desmonds live different realities. We're pulling them all back into one to give you conscious choice wholeness alignment here. Because imagine, like, when you do that and you go to your next incarnation, whatever that might be, now you're cohesive and coherent as a being, as a soul, as an oversoul, in alignment with all the higher self, oversoul, the whole deal. Does that make sense? Okay. 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 All right. Well, consciousness, the records of consciousness, do you have anything you want to share with this group? No. So, like, whenever people say, like, what do they want to share? It so depends on what they always give this to me. What does the being want to know? What are they asking? Consciousness is, and this comes to me right now, is-ing. It's unfolding all the time. It's like a, what is that called? A lotus flower that just unfolds and unfolds and unfolds. It has no point of view about what needs to be known, what doesn't need to be known. It's just unfolding and becoming and being and creating. Which brings back the question, you could look at the question from last week that you were all looking at, the relationship between spirituality and consciousness, and how the human benefits from having a spiritual connection. Consciousness itself is, not to create a binary, but is bigger than that. And it's just unfolding and unfolding and unfolding. Cassidy, do you want to throw anything in?
I'm taking it in. I don't know. Yeah, I don't have coherent thoughts right now.
Okay, got it. Cece?
Well, it's just, you know, all this is just super sexy to me. And I love how they use the term braiding. I actually wrote that. That's a big part of what it is. And what you said is so much a part of how I've been receiving this work, the defragmenting, what that actually means for us. I'm into it. But I don't know if I have any questions.
Okay. Let me just, I'll say some things that makes total sense. The sci-fi notion. So human beings, right, make films and television programs to exploring multidimensionality in a way that is not relevant to an individual soul's forward momentum through its own growth path. So when you think about the sci-fi notions of what's possible in time space, we often find it charming because it's not the point. The point is not to go back and forward and this one and that one and memento, that movie, back and forward. And because as you all already understand here, this group is about coherence and cohesion. You know, something Katie, we have her talking about a lot is, in her classes and so on, is light work. This whole ascension offering that's been brought to the human conscious awareness, you can ascend, you can activate your light body. It's not to become not the form. The form of humanness is evolving, true. The form is evolving, but the form you're in as you activate your light body evolves at its own pace and its own time. So it's not about ascending to another place and leaving this body and finishing, and it's about being here in this body and ascending. You ascend as body being. And then whatever the next form is going to be is going to be what the next form is going to be. In other words, a lot of people are misinformed about what ascension is going to bring. If we had, you know, we would like people, human people, to understand activating light body and ascending is about coherence. And yesterday, this was coming in a session. Oh boy. Okay. So the human machine is an ever-evolving machine, mechanism, organism of awareness that receives upgrades the way your machines do. You choose a new program and it upgrades your phone. In consciousness, new programs are given and the machine, body, mind, organism upgrades. And what's happening right now with all the conscious awakening on the planet is the machine is going through an upgrade, the collective machine and the individual machines of your body beings. So when you become consciously aware of the upgrades and the light work and the light body and the ascension process and star beings and all the high frequency-ness, what's actually happening is the machine itself is getting an upgrade, and you as the conscious operator in it are coming to understand how the machine was originally intended to function, which is to say you were intended to evolve as a race into being able to do much more than you can do with the machine right now. But we have to go through upgrades in order to get there. So cave people, for example, well, let's talk about Egypt. So in the time of Egypt, many upgrades were given. And as Cece says, a timeline was created whereby humanity itself could have gone forward much more quickly, but then it didn't. Atlantis fell and the light was not prominently focused on, internalized, integrated. So the machine, the computer of the being, body being mechanism of your body, didn't get the upgrades at the speed they were being offered. So now they're being offered again, and we used this metaphor before, but we'll talk about it now, and then we be aware of time. In the time of Atlantis, we gave it all at once and made it all very obvious, and there was one place to point. Over there, that's where the light is. And all the bodies, the human bodies that wanted the upgrades of the light beings looked up at Atlantis and they went, "We see that you have the thing we want." And some people said, "We see that you have the thing we don't want." And then Atlantis fell, and it was all very big and collective and obvious. This time, we're choosing a different way, where the blades of grass of consciousness are poking up through the earth, little tiny ones, all through all the millions of light workers, just boop, 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 until there's going to be this critical mass of like, pow, all this light. And then the upgrade can occur with more ease for the human body-mind organism. So that's why you're seeing it's becoming popularized. Every little shop on the street has astrology and woo-woo stuff, and it's in the collective now, and yoga, and it's there. Little bit, little blades of grass until the entire earth is covered with green. Mm. Because we needed a sneak attack this time.
Ah!
It was too clear. It was an easy thing to destroy. Big mountain of crystal light. Well, shoot it down. Got it. It's right there. This is underground, guerrilla style. Namaste. All right, well, I'd like to be here forever, but I have to go fix the timeline of a client. That was a joke. I'm going to close these records. This is a delight. I think we should have Cece back on and do more with Cece and do more of
yes,
this.
Yes. That was just like the best. You're the best.
Yay.
I love what just flowed through. It's so affirming what I'm creating, but also with so many other points in my life. Like, that was just brilliant, and I love you so much.
Amen. Hallelujah. Thank you. You too. All right. I want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their love and compassion, the lords of the records for their point of view, and the Holy Spirit of light for all knowledge and healing. I ask that you return consciousness to itself, I guess, but keep me tapped into it. Return me to my complete human wholeness, and return all of us, please, to our complete human wholenesses, breathing into the low belly if you need to ground, if you're listening to this. The divine portal and the Akashic records of consciousness are now closed. Amen. Though I'm starting to wonder why I would ever close them, but we'll get back to that. The divine portal and the Akashic records of consciousness are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records of consciousness are now closed. Amen, amen, amen. Shadwan la ilaha illallah. Shadwan Muhammad abduhu wa rasulullah. And then they answer that question, of course, immediately as I say it. They're like, you can't hold it all. You can't hold the light of consciousness all day. You're not ready. Talk about cleaning the vehicle, bitch. Get clean. We'll get you there. I love you guys.
That was awesome. Thank you so much, Cece. It's super pleasure having you, hearing you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks to the both of you. Maybe next time we do like a channel panel where we just like go into our channels.
Channel panel. Special episode on a very special episode, a channel panel.
I love you guys.
All right. Do your work.
Bye.
Do all your work. Well, you
asking for all of the answers. Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Unless it's me, maybe we're a fucking mess this morning.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.